Pop Spotting 127.
Tuesday, September 13th, 2011.
Moments ago, this ship received word of a Cylon attack against our home worlds is underway.
Welcome to Pop Spotting. I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
It's TV Tuesday.
That's right. And as the fall TV season draws near, we know the format of our Tuesday podcast may change and evolve. I mean, there's going to be new shows and favorite shows coming back. But we looked back on what we've done these past several TV Tuesdays, and there's one glaring omission in our series of love letters to our favorite shows. So what show is on tap today?
Battlestar Galactica.
That's right.
As Dwight Schrute says, if you're not watching, you're an idiot.
Exactly. And that means, of course, that everyone should already love Battlestar Galactica. But I think that, you know, if you're as big fans as we are, it'd be kind of fun to look back and revisit it. And if you've not watched it, if you've never tried it out, we certainly hope to lure you over if you were reluctant to dive into this Battlestar Galactica.
I was reluctant.
You were.
Ryan was watching it in secret for a lot of the time. And then when I realized what he was up to, I really didn't know what to say, because the image I had in my mind was of the original series from back in the 70s, the really over the top and kind of cheesy
Danger Will Robinson.
That's what I had in mind, and I realized after I saw a couple of episodes that this show has nothing in common with the original series.
Absolutely. This was developed by Ronald D. Moore, a reimagining of that 1978 series created by Glenn Larson, but just in name and just in some characters, but everything else is completely different. Now, this series actually first debuted on television as a mini-series, and this was way back in 2003, but it was a smash hit. Everybody loved it, and that was all the Sci-Fi Channel needed to see to move ahead with a full series, and that picked up in 2005 and ran through March 2009. Now, believe it or not, I was surprised to realize that it was technically only 4 seasons of this show, and I think that's part of why we really like the show, because it feels like there was so much more there.
There are so many storylines, so many characters, so many things addressed, and the storytelling was so great that it really felt like 10 seasons, and it never got confusing. You never had to stop and think about, well, this happened and who's that character. It all flowed so seamlessly, and it was told so well.
Absolutely. I mean, the one thing that really strikes you when you first try to take a look at this Battlestar Galactica is the look of it, the feel of it. It feels real. It feels tangible. It feels like a completely realized universe. These ships in space are not, I mean, this isn't Star Trek The Next Generation. That was a fantastic series. It touched on some big human stories and arcs and big themes, but really that spaceship was like the cross between, I don't know, a Lexus leather interior and a Hilton lobby. I mean, it's just so unrealistic and so clean and sterile. And here you've got metal and you've got exposed wires and conduits and things dripping and sweat and really dirty and grimy people. And I think that strikes you right away, that it's not a completely sterilized space universe. And even just the space sequences are remarkable. In fact, once Battlestar Galactica did it this way, almost every other sci-fi series that follows did the same thing. You know, documentary-style shaky cameras, off-center shots, and of course, no swooshing of spaceships flying past, just the dead, cold silence of space.
When the show was ending, the Sci-Fi Channel ran a special on the making of Battlestar Galactica, and they showed what they did to do those space shots, and it was so little. It was just such a simple setup that I can't believe they made it look so good, and it's a testament to what they were able to do with what they had.
Exactly, and just the overall story is pretty straightforward. It's similar but very different from what you had from the original series. Here you have humans in kind of a futuristic spacefaring universe, but they were all exiled because their creations, these Cylons, these robots that were built to fight for them and work for them and build for them, basically turned on them, a very common sci-fi trope, and now they're basically trying to deal with the aftermath of nearly being wiped out by these Cylons, and they are still a factor. So yes, you had kind of these metal robots, the Centurions, they call them toasters in the series,
right.
But the other twist for Battlestar Galactica is that they evolved, these robots, these Cylons evolved so well that they have humanoid models that basically look and are almost completely indistinguishable distinguishable from regular humans.
So imagine that. The humans have an enemy that they can't even distinguish from themselves. And sometimes the enemy does not even know that they're your enemy.
Right. And so, I mean, really great twists all along the way. And in fact, in the later seasons, some significant reveals as for who's a Cylon and who's not. And that's a great running point of suspense and an opportunity for fantastic reveals. But there's so much more to BSG. And I think that it's the greater world, it's the universe and the interactions and the intrigue involved in this universe that makes Battlestar Galactica so compelling. I have made the argument many times that I feel that BSG is actually the first real, tangible, and credible, well-done post-9/11 series.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, especially in this past week, we've been seeing a lot of that and looking back onto how the world was before and after the terrorist attacks in New York City, how you had to deal with enemies within, how you had to balance civil rights against our need for security. And when you look at Battlestar Galactica, they were in the right place at the right time to explore those themes, and yet they weren't ham-handed about it. They weren't preachy about it. They were just very well-told, very well-paced stories with compelling, believable, three-dimensional characters. Just a great ride all the way around.
The show had everything. It had great characters. It had political intrigue. It was almost kind of like the West Wing in space. It was a war show. It was a show about religion and theology and dogma, and it was about terrorism and civil rights. There were so many things going on.
Absolutely. And you touched on some of the big ones. I mean, there is the religion and arguments over, you know, the sort of the Greek god, the Hinduism, or the monotheism. Is there a single god, or are there many gods? Visions and premonitions and fate and destiny. I mean, these are very familiar sounding themes, but they play a very big role in Battlestar Galactica as well. But you can really see the parallels with the War on Terror and suicide bombers. And I mean, they made some really direct references to Nazis moving into Paris, or the occupation of Iraq. And again, as I'm saying those things, it sounds like this series could be really preachy. It could be really holier than thou or judgmental about our modern world. But the fact of the matter is, I think it comes down to the characters, the people that we follow here, like any good ensemble show. Because we're invested in them and how they live in this complex world, we're not really focusing until later on what the story is actually being told, what the allegories are in terms of social commentary, because we care first and foremost about these people.
The heart and soul of this show is Commander William Adama, played by Edward James Olmos. Commander Adama is the captain of the Battlestar Galactica, which is one of the last remaining military ships in this particular world. And the only reason that it escapes attack by the Cylons is because it's very old and it's being decommissioned.
That's right. And I have to say, you know, in terms of starship captains, spaceship captains, captains of military operations, Edward James Olmos is fantastic. He is someone that I would follow into battle, and I'm not even really a military kind of guy. I mean, his performance and this character has to carry a lot of the weight, and he's totally up to that challenge.
Nobody gives a speech like that guy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when he gets on the horn and rallies the troops and tells them how tough it's going to be moving forward, I want to stand up and salute the guy.
So, and say we all.
Yeah, and I believe that he is, in fact, you know, a battle-worn, seriously scarred veteran of many challenges and many battles. And just a fantastic performance. But it's not just the military side. Although military, you know, regimes and structures play a big part of Battlestar Galactica, there is the civilian side of this surviving elements of the human race of the 12 colonies. And that's where we meet the sort of accidental president.
Mary McDonnell plays Laura Roslin. Laura Roslin is a teacher, and she's the Secretary of Education. And she really only got this appointment as a favor to somebody. And she's not really into being in the cabinet. But when all of her fellow cabinet members and the president die in the terrorist attack, she is sworn in as president. And she is a very reluctant president at first. But then she starts to take it more seriously. She starts to take a more active role. And she develops a professional relationship with William Adama.
And that relationship grows. I mean, in terms of all of the characters on the show, I love Mary McDonnell's performance, because Laura Roslin, I think of almost anyone, evolves the most. She goes from not wanting to be in charge to kind of being in charge to being really in charge to being a little too much in charge. She goes from being really strong to really weak and really sick and really vulnerable, and back to being noble and principled and strong and powerful again. I mean, she's all over the map. And I gotta say, that, I mean, apart from Edward James Olmos as William Adama, the female characters are really remarkable in this show.
I think the female characters are in some cases even more interesting than the male characters. For instance, Katie Sackhoff plays Starbuck, who was originally a man in the series, but Kara is a very interesting character because she is a tough girl. She's a tough girl in a world that is dominated by men, and that kind of character always fascinates me, but Kara is also very damaged and has a lot of emotional issues.
Well, there is that. I mean, I have to say that, you know, she could be a stock character. She could be something less than she is. I mean, but fortunately, we're living in a Joss Whedon world, and it's not just strong female characters as a type, because I do agree. I mean, she is a woman, and she makes no apologies for that. She has her moments of weakness. She has her moments of jealousy, and but overall, a very well-rounded character, and not just a tomboy trying to be, you know, a girl in a boy's world. I mean, there's so much more to her.
As for other female characters that are complex, you also have Grace Park as Sharon Boomer Valeri,
right,
who was originally a man in the original series also, but she's not only interesting because she's a girl in a man's world, but her character goes through several different changes, and she's asked to play a lot of different roles.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a tough position to be in as an actor, and I think Grace Park does solidly. But since we're on the topic of the female characters, I want to jump to number six. I mean, Trisha Helfer plays number six. She's one of the Cylons, and I will say up front that her character, the reason why, the way you would describe her is sexy, attractive. I mean, you think she's in the show just to look really good in a long, slinky red dress, but it turns out there's so much more there.
In any other show, you would make a judgment of somebody that looks like that, that they're only there for eye candy. But number six is a mysterious figure, and there are several different versions of number six.
Right.
She seems to exist in several different planes, and I think Trisha Helfer really embraces all of those different roles and brings something different to each.
She will definitely surprise you, I think. And but we do got to get back to the guy. So we love Commander Adama, but there are other people on the ship, and there are some really significant characters, and one of them being, you know, Commander Adama's son, Lee, or Apollo Adama.
Lee is played by Jamie Bamber, and he has a strained relationship with William Adama. His brother was killed in combat, and since then, Lee and William have not always seen eye to eye on a lot of things, but there is a lot of love there.
Absolutely, and, you know, sort of that father-son relationship evolves and tracks throughout the entire series. Of course, you know, Apollo has a relationship with Starbuck that's strained because they both want to be the lead pilot. They want to be the leader of this group of fighter pilots on the battleship, and there was a relationship with Lee's brother and Starbuck previously that complicates things. And, you know, once again, overall, the relationships with these characters are so complex and so layered that you have to keep watching. For example, the father-son dynamic and the expectations that maybe, you know, Commander Adama didn't want his sons to end up in war and in battle and putting their lives at risk, and maybe Lee had a different vision for his future and where he wanted to go, and watching all that play out is just fantastic storytelling. Another male character that would be really on my short list of guys I love, or even guys I love to hate, is the character of Dr. Gaius Baltar, played by James Callis.
I don't know, you say love to hate, I just love, because he's smart, he's a scientist, he's scheming, cunning, kind of evil. He's a little bit like Charles Manson toward the end.
Well, I really like that comparison. I mean, you've made it before, and I think it's spot on, and it's that performance by James Callis that is so good, so juicy, so, I don't know. I mean, he steals almost every scene that he is
in.
He can be a weasel. He can be pathetic. He can be cruel. He can be totally compelling and compassionate and charismatic. He can build a cult of followers, and he can be the most despised person in the universe all at the same time. So just tracking his evolution for sure through the series is a real pleasure to watch. I mean, these are just some of the top characters, main characters, but there are so many of them. There are lots of secondary characters. It's a huge cast, a lot of great actors and performances. Who's on your short list of folks that deserve mention in a podcast?
Richard Hatch. He played Apollo in the original series. He plays Tom, who's a member of the Resistance.
Right, and he kind of comes in, he has a lot of interactions with the president, and in fact, you know, when we're talking about how this at times turns into the West Wing in space, when you're talking about ambassadors and emissaries and intrigue and alliances and truces, he plays a key role, at least in those arcs, and it's just good to see an original cast member get some time on screen and not just with a token sort of cameo. That's a good one. I gotta say, I loved Michael Hogan as Saul Tai. Colonel Tai is a really good longtime, lifelong friend of Commander Adama. And if you think Commander Adama was sort of the battle-scarred, you know, world-weary leader of this ragtag bunch out in space, it turns out that Colonel Tai is even more, you know, scruffy, even more jaded and angry, and has an even harder time dealing with the way things are going. He is just really old-fashioned.
He's old school in a new squirrel world, and he's trying to deal with the way things are right now, and just when you think you're figuring him out, you don't really know him at all.
Absolutely. Colonel Tai goes through quite a bit in the series, and again, just a fantastic performance there. I mean, I really feel for the guy, and at the same time, there are times when you really hate the guy, so I mean, that's certainly a hallmark of good character. I only wish we had time to go through all of them. There's some fantastic secondary characters. I mean, you have, for example, Chief Galen Tyrrell. He's in charge of the landing deck where the fighters come in, but he's not just that guy. There's some really important story arcs with him. I think Aaron Douglas does a great job. There's an interaction between him and Callie, the character Callie, played by Nikki Klein. Just such an adorable character, a wonderful, fun character, someone that you really want to protect. I mean, I think that's a good performance. You had Duala, kind of the young female trying to really make her mark with this group and do the right thing, some important arcs for her, but turns out, you know, a tragic character because she gets caught in the crossfire between some other characters, you know, almost lost as a result of things that are far bigger or go beyond her.
Alessandro Giuliani as Gata, the CIC officer on the Galactica, he's kind of a secondary character, and then he really becomes prominent, but in a very tragic way.
Absolutely. I mean, actually, there's a lot of parallels between those two characters, and many more characters, so many great characters. We could continue to go down the list, but before we have to go, I do want to get back to just overall what's fantastic about this show. It's the fully realized universe that they live in, a completely familiar and believable one, but still a fantastical and different one. And I mean, just the story arcs and the things that happen. First, they're like renegades or rebels on the run. They're sort of like, you know, the Empire Strikes Back of Star Wars. And then they're trying to find a new land and settle it and create a new community and a world, sort of like Lost, maybe, trying to recreate civilization, you know, starting afresh. And then there's the occupation and dealing with the overlords and abuses and such. I mean, every step and every development, I think, just leads to more and more exploration and depth. It never seems like they're just dragging it on. It all feels natural.
And over all of this, you kind of have the theme of that everything repeats itself, that human behavior is just a big cycle.
Yeah, this all happened before. It will happen again. I mean, doesn't that sound like it only ends once and everything else is progress? I have to admit, the parallels with Lost are really, really clear. And if you were a big, big fan of Lost and everything that show either accomplished or tried to accomplish, and you've not tried Battlestar Galactica, I mean, that might be the best argument for you to give this series a serious try. Now, since we did bring up Lost, I do also want to discuss sort of the series finale, the way that Battlestar Galactica ended, because there are some parallels there. But before we do that, I do want to quickly talk about the soundtrack. I mean, we talked about the cinematography, the world, the visual effects, and all of that. But I think the music in Battlestar Galactica is one of its more unsung but really strong points.
It's brave and it's incredibly diverse. I mean, you have taiko drums and bagpipes and just crazy sounds. And Bear McCreary, the composer, puts everything together in a really interesting way. And He goes places with his music that you just really would not expect from a show about space.
Yeah, I mean, Michael Giacchino is often lauded for his work on Lost. I would say Bear McCreary here is that inventive, that, you know, outside of the box, that inclusive of different musical styles. It's very international. It's very multicultural. And it is, at times, very alien. And you mentioned the taiko drums. That's one of the many ways that this show just gets under your skin and gets you all riled up. I mean, I cannot stress enough that you should really be conscious of the music in Battlestar Galactica. That said, like any other beloved series, it was a very highly anticipated series finale, the end of the show. How do you think that Battlestar Galactica pulled it off?
I wasn't entirely satisfied with it because there were a lot of themes and things that they could have addressed on the show in the finale that they did on the show, and they just chose not to.
Well, I think they went in a completely different direction in terms of expectations, and I would say part of that is our fault. And I also think that like Lost, the creators of the show wanted to take a big step back and make a much bigger, universal, grand statement about the human condition, about the universe, and that's something that Lost did. I mean, I see a lot of parallels in terms of how both shows tried to wrap things up, and I might not have been really crazy about the Battlestar Galactica series finale, but after I saw the Lost series finale, in many ways, those parallels made me soften up. You know, I kind of had to understand really what they were trying to accomplish. But don't get us wrong. Even if you don't feel fully satisfied by the end of Battlestar Galactica, and if you were, we'd like to hear from you too. But if you don't let that turn you off, and don't let that intimidate you, because you will never regret spending the time to watch this series.
And it's perfect because as a primer, you can watch the 3-hour miniseries on DVD, and it's a really good introduction to the show. You meet the characters, you find out what the show is about and some of the themes and some of the things that they address.
And there's even a good twist. I mean, if you just watch the miniseries, it's a worthwhile enterprise, but I think you won't be able to stop there. I think those 3 hours are going to make you want to invest all the other hours to watch the rest of Battlestar Galactica.
And if not, you might be dead.
And there might just be something wrong with you. So that's our little tribute to one of our big favorites, Battlestar Galactica. It has to be up there in the short list of some of our favorite shows of all time. But as I mentioned, you know, we're coming up on the new fall TV season. I think next week we might touch on some of the various things on the schedule, some new shows that are coming out that we're going to want to talk about, and some of our favorite shows that are going to be returning to the
Fringe
air.
Is back next week.
Yeah, Fringe and a lot of others. I mean, we just went to the Hawaii Five-0 Sunset on the Beach. We might talk about that. There's so much good stuff that TV Tuesday will start to cover a whole mess of things every single week. But what's in the mix? What topics do we cover? That's where you come in. Yes, we want to hear from you what new shows we should track that you think are worth tuning into. We'd certainly like to hear what you think of them as they air. And certainly, whether it's Fringe or Hawaii Five-0 or who knows what coming back to the air, we'd like to have conversations about how things are going with the new season. All you need to do is get in touch.
Leave a comment on our blog at popspotting.net, drop us a line of feedback at popspotting.net, or leave a voicemail at 815-310-0808.
We love the voicemails, but if you're shy or if you're just addicted to Facebook, that's fine. You can find us there at facebook.com/popspotting. Some really cool conversations have been started by listeners there. We'd also invite you to share our page with your friends on your wall. If you like Twitter as much as we do, that's a great place to catch up as well. You can find us at twitter.com/popspotting. My personal account is at Hawaii, and Jen is at Mrs. Hawaii.
Tune in tomorrow when we talk about our favorite soundtracks.
That's right, a top five from both of us. We want to say thanks to Dan Pashman of The Sporkful for our theme song, but we really want to say mahalo anui loa to you for listening.
For Pop Spotting, I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
So say we all.
So say we all.